This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Oh, I am your co-host, Christopher Mukigana Harrington. Joined from the great state of New York, the patron saint of wrestling himself, Mr. Brandon Howard Thurston. Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Mookie. We're able to hear you mostly over this music, which I've now stopped.
Yeah, but I was going to say, the music disappeared, so I hope that was intentional.
We're here on Google Hangouts. We're here on YouTube, broadcast in every country that YouTube is in. Maybe. Unless you've been banned from some, I don't know. But we're going to talk about the WWE Investor presentation, and because we hit our goal of subscribers, we're now going to do a visual look at the latest slides from the WWE corporate website.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff, but we're going to do the whole free show here on video and see how it works out. Brandon, how was your weekend? Did you wrestle on Friday and Saturday?
Did wrestle on Friday and Saturday. I did. This is true.
You should turn on the video so they can see you to see that you're still in one piece, that you're alive.
I'm still here. I'm here. I'm wearing glasses and still in one piece.
And were you successful in both of your ventures this weekend?
I won both matches. This is true. Yeah.
And you sold some merch money, right, too?
I sold a shirt. How'd you know about that?
I'm your accountant. I'm doing taxes for the state of New York. They've asked me to audit some of the independent wrestling that's going on here. It's too much malarkey.
Yeah. I haven't gotten that raise yet that you promised me that you would get for me from all the promoters as part of being my new agent, but I'm patient.
You know. We're waiting for the big indie expansion of ESW, and that's when the real money's going to kick in.
I'm looking forward to that. So,
that's good. So, did you have good matches? Were you happy with them?
Yeah, we had a debut. A new student from our school, Ronnie Hartman, made his debut at IWF in Brockport. He even had a second match the following day. He wrestled Dewey, who you probably know. I wrestled him and I beat him on Friday. And then I wrestled one Vince Valor in Jamestown, New York, the following day for Southern Tier Wrestling.
Nice.
It was a really nice venue. It was like a small like TV studio looking venue with like silhouettes of buildings, like a skyline in the background. It was a small, very small venue, but a lot of people in it, tightly packed and a hot crowd. It was a good time.
Hot crowd. Hot. Yeah. That's what we want to hear. Father's Day coming up here. Are you doing anything fun for Father's Day?
I'm recording WrestleNomics Radio, and what could be better than that?
That's a good point. I'm going to go have some sushi in Lionel Lakes, Minnesota, in a little bit. Yeah, we got about 2 hours here, so the countdown's on. We'll see what's happening. But today we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff on our free show here. We did a excellent 2.5-hour premium show earlier this week for subscribers. And we talked to David Bixenspan, who wrote this article for Deadspin that was kind of a big bombshell this week. We talked about a little bit about the Young Bucks and All In and things of that nature. And, of course, Ring of Honor's news that they're going to promote Madison Square Garden. We talked on the premium show about Mr. Harold May and just more articles I found on him, more about his leadership style and his business ethics. And just things like that. So it'll be very interesting to see the influence there. And we had a really good show. And so anyone who's interested in the show can always go. I'm doing item number one on our list here, plug premium show. Then go to patreon.com/WrestleNomics. $5 a month gets you access to everything. Mm-hmm. And what I will point out is for those of you who listen to the free show, you are subsidized. You're subsidized. Like the TV rights subsidize everything else for WWE. Well, the Patreon subscribers subsidize your free show, because we would not be doing this free show weekly. We would not be doing this free show with as much depth and content and video and audio and everything else for free if it wasn't for the Patreon subscribers. Right. So we want to thank them very much. And we want to brag a little bit. We hit our goal.
Yeah.
We set a ridiculous goal when we started. I wrote down $100 was my first goal to go weekly. Mm-hmm. And we hit that very quickly. And then I put up an absurd goal of $500 a month, it was one of those things where we wanted to set ourselves a stretch target, but we also wanted to make it too difficult to actually do. Mm-hmm. So we put $500 up, and I honestly didn't think we would hit $500 in our first year. And coming into our first year, we're very close to kind of the launch date here, especially, you know, we're on like episode 52, 53 depending on how you want to count things.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, 1 year in and we hit the number. And so that means for All In, Brandon's getting that tattoo.
Nope, not getting a tattoo. Might buy a piece of Bullet Club merchandise to send to a random subscriber, or I don't know. We'll work that out. We've got 3 months, 2.5 months to procrastinate on that.
Well,
and I just want to mention too, this is, we're subsidized by all of our very generous listeners and subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. However, while we do appreciate that, when the day comes when someone wants to pay us a massive radio rights fee, we will just, you know, we will just please ourselves and do whatever we want. So beware.
So you're just saying that basically, like I've said many times, we are for sale. When Global Force Gold wants to get a sponsorship on this show, we're ready to jump in.
In the words of one of the most successful businessmen of all time, we are open for business.
We are open to discussions. For our first topic here, let's use this audio visual stream here and see if we can actually kind of go through something. This was a topic that I wanted to do, and I kind of feel like it's going to be inferior in an audio form and superior in a visual form. So why not do it as a live broadcast? And what I wanted to show was this investor presentation, kind of the differences between the January version that came out and a May version that they put up very quietly. Yeah. It was not in conjunction with any of their big announcements. It was not in conjunction with any big presentations.
And for anybody who's just listening to the audio real quick, if you want to see the video version, you can just go to our YouTube page, or we've probably got links to our Twitter by now, by the time you listen to this.
Or go to @WrestleNomics and we will have it linked up there as well.
Yeah, it's going to be free for everybody, correct?
This one is free for everyone because, as we say, my goal is not to create a paywall that then prevents people from getting information, because everybody has a different situation about why they do or do not subscribe to things.
Yeah.
And I very much appreciate that I live in a time and an era where I can support people monetarily. And I appreciate that people support us. But at the same time, I'm not trying to hold people back from learning. I'm not trying to hold people back from actually hearing information and debating it. There's nothing I hate more than when you see Squared Circle and it says Meltzer said blank, and you realize that half these people aren't able themselves to verify that.
Yeah.
And same with my I go on a rant on the other show about star ratings and ProFightDB and how 10% of star ratings over the last year were not done by Dave. Uh-huh. Now, they're not the controversial ones for the most part. You know, the 7 stars came from Dave, but at the same point, you kind of want people to understand, what are they reading? Is it primary or secondary? And so many times people are distorting what is said. You know, Sportskeeda has made an entire, you know, life cycle out of this, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Writing articles just based on some offhand comment Dave or Brian will have.
Is it just Sportskeeda that's doing that, or is that the entire wrestling media industry?
You know, I think Sportskeeda is the most, I don't know, they are profound in what they do. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I was looking at was just this difference here between these two versions. And you probably can't see very well, but this is the January version on my right.
Yeah.
And then this is the May version on my left.
Yeah, you're not seeing double. You're doing a side-by-side comparison to show the differences.
So I have the actual graphs of what's different between the two that I can also flip to, but I just kind of wanted to show what it looks like and how you can kind of see this really quickly. So in the investor presentation, and I'm going to continue to commentate this because, of course, many people are listening to this for free and they're going to try their best to follow along. What things are changing between these two decks? Well, the first one is we actually finished 2017. If you remember, in January of 2018, we did not have the full year results for 2017 because they're typically about 2 months delayed. So it was the middle of February that they actually do the full year numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll notice that the deck on the right, which is the January deck, is actually a very carefully on the bottom here says 12-month trailing basis, TTM. That's what it means, 12-month trailing. And so you can see just how much it went up in that extra month, where we see it went up from 784 million to 801 million. It went up from 75% international, still 75%, I'm sorry, 75% domestic or North America, mm-hmm. and 25% international.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's lots of little changes here for what the year over year changes were in terms of increasing revenue. And it's always comical to see, you know, not only were they comparing 12 months, but then they were actually doing the 12-month basis to the 12 months prior to that. So you'll see while the 801 is higher than the 784 in terms of what their revenue is, mm-hmm. how much record revenue is up is actually down, mm-hmm. up 72 million versus the prior time said up 84 million because it was using the same 12-month period comparison, which is good, you know, that they used both times 12-month periods and they weren't overlapping any of that. But it's just kind of intriguing to see the difference between those two. Yeah. Most of these slides are not massively different, but there's one or two that are really different. And I think those are going to be the ones I'm going to want to talk a little bit more about. Mm-hmm. Next slide here is this key growth drivers contributing to record year in 2017. Mm-hmm. And again, you see they've now decided to go from a basis of saying, well, where was I 2015, 12 months trailing? Well, I was at a million paid and I got up to a million and a half. So then they decided to say, no, what if I went back to 2014? And so then they used 2014 as their number so that they could then say, oh, I was at half a million and now I'm at 1.53. So it was just very funny where it's like, you know, this was a 22% growth for WWE Network average paid subscribers. And now they're able to claim 39% because, again, you know, they're using different base numbers. The TV escalation fees are the same number, 18% growth going from 130 million to 213 million from 2014 to 2017. Continued international growth is again, they decide to change their baseline. So instead of talking about 2015 to 2017, they're now talking about 2014 to 2017. And they now can say it's a 20% growth instead of just saying 13% growth. Mm-hmm. I just find it humorous that, you know, it just kind of suddenly occurs to them, hey, what if I go back? What if I just use an older number? Yeah. You know, why don't you compare yourself to 1990? Mm-hmm. I bet you have enormous social media growth since then. Mm-hmm. When it goes to the history of compelling content, they talk about the three ecosystems, pay television, ad-supported, digital and social, and then direct-to-consumer. One interesting kind of just comparison factor is you can see on the right side, again, the older deck, it would say 6 billion hours of content consumed, 4.3 billion international, 840 million U.S. weekly TV and pay-per-views. And again, if you think about that, that's an absurdly high number, right? So here, this is saying 66% of our consumption is international when it comes to total hours consumed. And it's suggesting that is of the weekly programs and the pay-per-views.
Okay, so Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views.
Yeah, but that's absurd.
66%? What's absurd?
It's absurd because the digital...
No, what is absurd?
Well, the fact that when we usually talk about, hey, there's all this viewing happening on India, right?
Yeah.
We talk about how much digital viewing there is. That should be in this little yellow corner of ad-supported digital and social, 14% or 550 million hours.
Uh-huh.
This is suggesting there's 4.3 billion hours being consumed internationally, that the international market for watching Raw and SmackDown is five times larger than it is in the U.S.
Okay, that makes sense.
It does? What countries are that? What countries are – where are you getting – if we have 2 million some people that watch Raw and SmackDown in the U.S., 2 to 3 million, where are you getting the next 12 to 15?
The U.K., India, OSN, South Africa,
China,
Canada.
Mexico. Yeah, but we know in U.K. they barely do 100,000 viewers, 200,000 viewers.
True. That's just one among like six markets I just mentioned.
That's
though.
That's their second just international market.
It's their second what?
Largest international market. That's where they make the second most money in the world.
It's their second most lucrative market, but I don't think it's their second biggest viewership market.
Mm-mm. And so it's just an interesting fact where basically this is suggesting
Partner Summit? Like, I mean, we want to believe this or not, but the India viewership is like 13 million weekly, whether that's just Raw or Raw and SmackDown or whatever.
And it's also, do you believe international viewing numbers? Like, they've said themselves that they don't really have great metrics on that.
Yeah, well, they're going to, you know, they want to make the sales pitch, so.
Yeah. It's just very interesting to me where we talk so much about it being all these YouTube views being so heavy. But if you actually look at their doc is claiming it's weekly programming and pay-per-view views. Which would suggest that it's either they're counting the YouTube views of content that is... My guess is they're counting the content of Raw and SmackDown clips on YouTube as part of weekly programming and pay-per-views.
I don't know what I'm looking at here or how to read this. 14%. Yeah. Are they saying all of the content, all of the viewing of WB worldwide, only 14% of it is digital and social. Is that what I'm supposed
That's
to get?
That's what it's saying.
Is that, well, I think is that the really only weird. Possible interpretation here? Why is it cut out? Why are the pieces cut out like this? In like the 5% piece is the biggest of all.
Because they're saying in-ring highlights and short-form original stuff is what they're calling ad-supported digital and social. But the in-ring weekly programs, they're calling weekly. I just think it's really odd because it seems like a very different interpretation of what I've always been led to believe, which is the driving factor is the YouTube hours and billions of content. And this would instead be saying, I'm adding up numbers for India watching Raw and SmackDown. And that's where my 66% is coming from, which would suggest it's coming from linear television viewing mostly.
All I think this is saying is that 60 of Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views, 66% of the viewing of those programs is coming from international.
But it's also saying of the 6 billion hours that they consumed, 4.3 billion of it came from TV watching linear, and only 550 million came from YouTube and Facebook.
That doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. So that's why I'm saying it seems really weird to me. It's a strange.
There's not.
I don't know if they're
3 billion
content hours created and saying on an annual basis of what is being consumed new every year. It, like I say, I think it works because you get to be able to say, well, in South Africa, this distributor reaches this many millions of people. Therefore, I'm counting this many people watching my show, regardless of how accurate those viewership numbers are compared to YouTube, where you could argue there's a lot more validity to the numbers. Even if they're bots, there's at least validity versus just random television sampling and then projection.
Yeah, this is confusing and I don't know. I don't know how to make sense of this. It's just big numbers. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just kind of something that struck me now while we were looking at it. It's also interesting to see them flip from 6 billion to percentages, you know, it's intriguing to me whenever they make small little changes like that. The number of social media followers going up from 825 to 900.
But real quick, unless they're saying like, can you scroll back down to that again? Unless they're saying like all of the, you know, what's the most consumed stuff on YouTube on W's YouTube channel? It's the clips of Raw and SmackDown. So maybe they're counting it like that. But that's what I'm wondering.
That's
but that would
I'm
be
wondering.
Digital
Same
digital,
time,
and supported digital
right,
social.
It's their own subcategory.
I don't know. Who knows what George is trying to say here?
Yeah. So I find it just intriguing, you know, an example of what's happening. When you go to largest social and digital sports properties in the world, they added a new slide called 1.2 billion engagements, whatever that means. You have an engagement here. How's your new media brand and how are we doing here? How many of these can you name?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Snapchat, YouTube. Don't know what that is. Is that WhatsApp, Google Plus, Periscope? I don't know what that is. And Tumblr. What's the F?
I'm wondering if one of these is like Weibo or something, like the Chinese chat app that they added a presence on. Mm. Maybe that with that eyeball with the lines through it is.
Maybe.
You can probably do the Google and tell me. And then Foursquare, I think, might be what that F is. Mm. So number one sports channel on YouTube, they're now going up to 20 billion views. Number two is now Dude Perfect at 5 billion. And number three is NBA. It used to be NBA ahead of Dude Perfect. So apparently NBA is no longer relevant is what I can take away from this. That pay no attention to the fact that everyone is talking about NBA right now. Even you must have noticed that, right?
What happened?
There's a lot of talk about NBA right now.
The NBA finals happened or are happening.
The hullabaloo about different players leaving different teams.
Yeah.
The number one channels on YouTube, number one is T-Series, which is an Indian kind of movie soundtrack page, which is funny when you read their Wikipedia. I think it refers to how like they started off kind of like as a pirated, like they used to pirate, like the, I think the company started off almost as a pirating company and then became like an actual big soundtrack company over years. Mm. Number two is WWE. And number three is now Ryan's Toy Reviews at 19 billion. What's funny is you can look at the old version and number three was PewDiePie.
Refresh my memory. Which one is the new one? And which one is the old one? Left and right.
I'm sorry. The right one is old. The left one is new.
Okay.
And, just the fact that PewDiePie has been getting himself in so much controversy over the years here, that it's not surprising to see them happy to not have to mention him anymore. The next slide is pretty much identical. It's the heroes we see in ourselves. So Katniss Everdeen and Luke Skywalker, mm-hmm. and then Seth Rollins with his curly locks.
That's right. Well, this is George's favorite wrestler.
Yeah. You have the WWE moments here. You know, Bruno became Andre. Andre became Austin. Austin became The Rock. The Rock became Charlotte Flair, mm-hmm. as we all know.
Yep.
Then we have a couple slides here about, you know, how does the model change over time? No real changes here, except for this is, you know, what they're arguing is we had the traditional media model from 1999 to 2010. Then we retooled for transformation is their new phrase from 2011 to 2014. And then the new media model. So new media brand and part of the new media model.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get into playing with numbers again. A little bit of this coming from changing baselines and trailing 12-month periods. So 2010 stays the same in this case. So they're not using a trailing 12, but it's just a full 12 from 2010. And then saying, looking at it to 2017. So it's basically saying our CAGR is now 33%. Again, that's a compound annual growth rate. And so we went from 10% digital to 40% digital in 2017. And their old numbers was 10% digital going to 35% digital. And of course, this is because they get to claim pay-per-view revenue now as digital. If you take the old pay-per-view revenue and treat that as digital, that number is not going to be nearly of a dramatic transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And with the direct-to-consumer, I think they define direct-to-consumer as the, you know, it's similar to the work that you and I were doing, which is, yeah. is the money that comes directly from a consumer. In this case, that you can see, actually, they put a little definition line down here, www.network.com, WWE shop, and various revenue lines between live events and venue merchandise, and non-DTC refers to the remainder of company revenues.
But we came to a much different presentation in terms of, like, the progression of direct-to-consumer versus non-direct-to-consumer. It's becoming increasingly less direct to consumer, at least the way that we defined it. Like, where's the TV money here?
In this case, I think TV money's excluded. But again, this is also looking forward in the future.
But they're at a total of 801. That's the total revenue. That's the entire company.
Yeah, but you're saying we're not up to 50% yet, is what your point is?
I'm saying that WWE is saying that their company is increasingly direct to consumer, and we say exactly the opposite.
Well, we say in the next go around, it's definitely going to diminish because those revenue lines, network, WWE.com, WWE shop, live events, venue merchandise, all of those are going to grow at a much lower growth rate than what TV money is going to grow at.
Okay.
So it's going to be washed out very much.
So in 2017, what is non-direct to consumer? TV, which is like 35%.
WWE Studios, which is negligible.
Nothing.
Possibly some digital media stuff. Licensing okay. would be the biggest one, probably.
Okay.
Licensing, which should still remain non-direct to consumer.
Okay, that makes sense then, I guess. Right?
And then they have just kind of those miscellaneous lines.
Yeah.
Looking at just how does the deck, same 1,500 hours, and it's, the three subcategories, pay television, ad supported, digital and social, and direct to consumer. Then they go through the scale of just trying to say, okay, what's the difference between pay TV? And here's a great example of where the numbers magically change in a very quick period of time. So the global scale for pay TV is 650 million homes.
Mm-hmm.
4 months later, the global scale for TV is 800 million homes.
And that's the difference here. What's the date of the older one?
January of 2018 and May of 2018. So 4 months later. So in theory, I would guess it comes from, they probably either got new data from Kagan, SNL Kagan, which does a lot of TV numbers for them,
yeah.
or Nielsen, or they actually signed some new contract where proposed reach is very high. You know, the number of homes that could order this service is very high, not necessarily the number of homes that are watching this.
Maybe, and then of maybe they've also just been reading like maybe they've just been reading Needham and investments analysis about how they've doubled their TAM because now they have women's wrestling, and apparently women have never watched wrestling before, supposedly.
Yeah, so I just thought that was really interesting that, you know, to that point there about how many hours are being consumed in international.
Yeah.
Well, if you can just magically find another 150 million viewers.
Yeah.
In 4 months, then yeah, I can believe that you can make your international number massively huge. It also says to me, I don't know what of this to believe is a real number. Not that I think it's 100% made up, but
yeah,
you know, number of homes, that's like saying the number of homes that could get MLW versus the number of homes that do, or access, or anything else.
I guess it's like, we know that the USA Network is in what, 90 some odd million homes, something like that. So I guess it's just the sum.
I think
sum
total. Numbers are solid. I think it's just international.
This is domestic and international, isn't it? Provides global scale, right?
Yeah, yeah. So my point is, I think the US number is very hard. Like, people understand the US number. They can put a real fact basis to it.
Yeah.
I think the international number is very soft in terms of who could access PPTV.
Yeah.
Who could be watching on Indian television.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what it is. Or even, like, when they sign a big deal for, like, the Philippines or a place like that. Or Australia, you know. Then we get down to data. Interesting to see the number of clips is actually dropped between these two things here, from 42,000 clips to 40,000 clips. The number of video views has increased by 2 billion, from 18 billion to 20 billion. And consumption is 14% of total viewer consumption in 2017. And again, this is just kind of interesting that I think we have spent so much time assuming that when they talk about the billions of views that they get, it's in YouTube. But this would really suggest that it's not, their international viewership is not necessarily all this YouTube stuff. That a lot of that international viewership is in what they're considering the pay TV arena.
Which bullet point am I supposed to look at to know that?
I'm just saying in general. It's just the fact that it's such a smaller percentage of the total viewer consumption. I guess I had always been thinking when they talk about consumption being way up, that they meant it was up because of ad-supported digital and social.
14% of total viewer consumption in 2017 is what? Ad-supported digital and social?
Yeah. YouTube, ESPN.com, Twitter, Facebook, and then shows like Superstar Inc. or the Bella Twins YouTube channels.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We could do some algebra.
I don't know what to make of it.
We could do
it's some. It's also ESPN.com listed, making you wonder, is there like some kind of ad share agreement with them, with ESPN.com?
Yeah, it's just their co-opted media partner, I think.
Well, someone was telling me that on something like the Dan Patrick show, that they were running WWE Network ads, like the radio show.
Okay.
Which was interesting. Like, they were going after sports, you know, fans to say, hey, you should watch WWE Network.
So they're buying ads?
Like radio ads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was interesting. And lastly, then we get to the third thing, the DTC section, which to them is pay-per-views, in-ring programs, documentaries, and lifestyles. But this is basically the WWE Network programming. And not much of a change here, except for they went from being recognized as the fifth largest U.S. SVOD, which is subscription video on demand network, in 2016, to just being recognized as a leading U.S. SVOD network, the number two branded service.
Yeah. So have some other SVOD services picked up and surpassed WWE?
Well, I think I think branded is one of their big things here. It's based on this Parks Associate Research article that they did. Brandon is the not Brandon, but
branded
is the big thing, because they don't want to compare themselves to HBO. Mm-hmm. They don't want to compare themselves to Hulu.
Yeah.
They don't want to compare themselves to Netflix.
What's number one here, MLB?
I think MLB, yeah.
Yeah.
And then presumably things like the NBA and NHL and the new ESPN service and whatnot would all be in that category in the future. Mm-hmm. And same thing, they don't want to probably compare themselves to Crunchyroll or other things like that, too.
Or Netflix.
Obviously Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
Then we get down here to this, like, where's things going to grow, growing forward, multiple drivers. And they have these three groups. They have live events, consumer products, other, and media.
Mm-hmm.
And graph is just kind of like your consulting graph 101,
mm-hmm.
where it doesn't really say anything, but it looks pretty.
Time.
Time, today, numbers, colors, key growth drivers, monetization, international gap, engagement, utilize 360 business model. You know, it's all the keywords you want. What's intriguing is you'll notice that the growth percentages, what the point of this graph, I believe, is supposed to be that live events is going to grow, but only at a very slow rate. Consumer products, others, is a bigger opportunity, and it will continue to grow, but again, at a slow rate. Media is going to grow a lot. And here they have a little gap number. It says 60%. We don't know exactly what they mean by that, but I guess what they're trying to say is 60% of the revenue that they drive is coming from media, maybe, is what they're trying to say. And then they're saying in the future, today we're at 65%. So we're already going up. And so to me, this also is saying, hey, look, in the future, media is going to be the engine of growth for us, which, of course, with these new TV deals, it should be. I hope it is.
Yeah, it absolutely will be. I mean, if the numbers that Hollywood Reporter has reported come to fruition.
Yep. They're still using their 159 million fan homes out of 311 million broadband homes. If you actually look here at some of these estimate things, you'll notice suddenly they'll mention, oh, the information is U.S. only. And then they'll mention, you know, they're looking at a 2014 and 2015 numbers. So this crazy survey is already getting more and more out of date now that we're 3 years past it. Mm-hmm. This is a weird one. Average paid subscribers. WWE Network has sustained year-over-year growth. Average paid subscribers started off in 2014 at 666. Then went up to 1138, then 1418, and then now 1530. And then they kind of say, oh, here's our actuals. 0.56, 1.14, 1.42, and 1.53. What do you notice different between these two graphs, Brandon?
The numbers are rounded, but the 2014 number...
changed.
Yeah. Can you reverse the order of these two? Can you put the old one on the left and the new one on the right? Sorry.
You just can't deal with it, can you?
This is, my brain is I can't, I'm sorry. CTE, man.
it's okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the number has gone down on 2014 quite a bit, yeah. And they've just decided to use decimals and round.
But they lost 100,000 subscribers from 2014. And I went back and I looked at the 10K, and the real number is 560-some thousand. Hmm. So the old one was probably just wrong.
Are there were free counted in there?
I think what it might have been is free wouldn't have made a difference really, because when they started off,
there was no free.
They just did the one free. Yeah.
Wait a minute. There was you got it for 2 weeks for free.
Yes. But what I think actually happened is this might be the difference of the number of months that you're dividing by. That perhaps one of them they're dividing by 12 months and one of them they're dividing by the 10 months it was in active for, or it was just a straight up mistake.
Or when the lower number you start with, the higher your CAGR is at the end.
It's true. The CAGR went from 33% all the way up to 39%, which I think is just another, it's just intriguing. Every company's always redoing their investor presentation and the way that they present the numbers. And of course, you and I, as one of the benefits that we offer for premium Patreon subscribers, is they get access to our drive full of all the historical data we can grab. Mm-hmm. And so you can see how this has transformed. And if you go back 5 years, it's unrecognizable to what it is today. It's a completely different format. It's completely different timing and purpose and direction.
Yeah. We have a folder out there called like investor presentations. You can see. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's literally where I took this out of, is I went to the Google Drive and just pulled it up. Mm-hmm. And so it's a nice benefit at the $10 plus level. And it's just intriguing to me, because either you catch these mistakes or you catch where they're, you know, massaging the numbers a little bit more to make it seem more impressive. And
you can see how much better at PowerPoint George Barrios has gotten over the years.
We go through the TV contract numbers. No changes on this slide. We go through the when are we going to make new deals, basically reminding us that we have till September for them to announce the U.S. deal. So we're only in June now. So we're only in month two of what, a 5 month period that it could happen in.
Yeah.
So I am still expecting them to move forward soon. Maybe they'll wait until the next earnings call, which would be in what, August?
Late July or early August, yeah.
Yeah. Then they mentioned the UK deal will be in the second half of 2018. So they have all the way from now, essentially, through December to come up with the UK deal, and they're not even going to mention India until the first half of 2019.
Yeah.
So then we have, you know, what does it look like for our future opportunities here? They mentioned 5 marketplaces down here. How's your flags?
Let's see, China, India, Mexico, Chile, and Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
I think it's Saudi Arabia. Well, no, that's not Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has the big
green like, flag.
Support. Yeah. What flag is that? It's red, green, white, and black.
I don't know. UAE. Could be UAE. Well, we're acting as if we're not connected to the internet right now.
Yes, it is UAE.
Yes. Yep.
And then they mentioned their partners down here, the PPTV for China, the Sunday Damal, which is the India like localized show they do, the WWE Saturday Night, which is the show they do in Fox Sports Latin America. And then there's another WWE show here, which I'm guessing is the OSN show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. WWE Saturday Night is not being shot at Center Stage, is it?
No, sadly not.
If you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, then we've got good news for you. Dollar Shave Club, it's got all the stuff you need to help you out.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. And what's even better is that they'll do shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that will have your behind feeling tingly clean.
Oh my.
What do you like about Dollar Shave Club, Brandon?
Lately I've been using it to shave my cheeks, the cheeks on my face, maybe some other parts of my body, which I'm not going to get into right now.
I love their amber and lavender calming body cleanser. It's a different smell than anything I've ever smelled, and you can't even find a product like that at the store. Instead, it gets delivered right to my door. All their stuff is made with top shelf ingredients. It won't break your budget, and you feel the difference. And shipping is included. So no going to the pharmacy, no going to the drugstore, no going to the grocery store. You just get it showing up right there in your basement apartment, just like Brandon does.
That's right. And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. Just for $5, you can get their daily essentials starter kit. It comes with body cleanser, the One Wipe Charlies, those amazing butt wipes, their world famous shave butter that I use, and their best razor, the 6-Blade Executive. For all the WrestleNomics executives out there, they keep the blades coming for just a few dollars a month. Add in shampoo, toothpaste, anything else you need for the bathroom. You check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/WE. That's dollarshaveclub.com/WE. You can remember it by thinking dollarshaveclub.com, WrestleNomics executive, dollarshaveclub.com/WE.
And if you work for WWE, just take one W off and give us the credit.
That's right.
Then the next couple slides are the same between the two. It's just all about how do we, you know, come up with ideas for using our user data to talk about people. And we could do a whole show just about this, where, you know, it's about how much do they buy and spend money on. There's 1,000 variables they look at. It's the consumption that they have. It's the what kind of programming do they do? And they use it to leverage viewership data to focus our production strategy. So in theory, the UK tournament is being done because people enjoyed the UK tournament mm-hmm. last year. Mm-hmm. The Young Classic is coming back because people like that. 205 Live is a hit because people watch 205 yeah. Live. Now, is that true? I don't know.
Well, they can make an internal argument that they should continue to do this based on the data that they have. Right?
Yeah. And at the same time, something like Camp WWE being renewed would suggest that they think there's a value in that. That or it's just incredibly long lead times on things like animation production. So you kind of have to go for it and you can't really give up on it halfway through.
Yeah. Or maybe it's the acting out of Vince, you know, knowing in the late 90s, it's us in South Park neck and neck. So what could be better than to, become South Park yourself?
And hire the Swerve director and get yourself in a lawsuit.
Yeah. South Park is probably much better than WWE Swerve, though. But anyway.
Or the Jackass director, I mean. Leverage viewership data to guide event touring. Kind of this other thing where they mentioned the network consumption of NXT supposedly drives part of the NXT touring schedule. Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious if there was more information about how successful this strategy was.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes absolute sense. But is it actually panning out right? Because local event promotion is so much more important than just saying, hey, I've got people that enjoy this show, I should do something there.
Yes.
And you could say the same thing about Cow Palace sales for New Japan or other things. Like, there's a difference between running a show in a local market and knowing that you have fans there.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Just that like Dave Meltzer was arguing with people on Twitter about how WWE doesn't even try to run the Cow Palace anymore because it's a difficult marketplace to do local promotion for. And WWE is much better established than New Japan.
WWE doesn't run in San Francisco?
They don't run at the Cow Palace.
Okay, but like they run near it, right?
Yeah, but I think they're just saying that it makes a difference where you're trying to promote. Literally, the venue itself can make a difference.
Okay. Is it hard to access? Do we know? Like, because of
sounds like it's not in the best part of town.
Okay.
And just other things. Like, I think it just goes to say there's a big difference between someone who watches your show and someone who gets in their car, drives, and buys a ticket and goes shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those radio ads are going to make a big difference on whether people actually know WWE is coming to town or whatever town. I had a CenturyLink guy try to show up and sell me fiber yesterday. And his first question to me was, when's the last time WWE was in town? I had no idea how to answer that question. Because I was wearing a WrestleMania shirt. It wasn't just he randomly walked up and said that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that sort of thing just kind of struck me. Where
is this like a door-to-door salesman? Is somebody just knocking on your door trying to sell you fiber cable?
Well, he's trying to sell internet services.
Internet service. And knocked on your door unsolicited? Door-to-door salesman in 2018?
Yeah. Two door-to-door salesmen.
Really?
This is shocking to basement-dwelling Brandon.
I've never heard of it. I used to live in a house, okay? And but I never had anybody knock on my door and try to sell something to me.
I technically live in the city. I live in the city of St. Paul.
I used to live in the city of Buffalo.
What can I tell you?
I don't know. Do you have people knock on your door and try to sell you stuff every so often? Does that happen?
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, probably sometimes during our show.
Oh, really? Maybe there's different laws in Minnesota. I don't know. Anyway, that's another podcast.
It has caused us all sorts of angst. I'll put it that way. It is not always a pleasant situation.
Huh.
This is the slide that I thought was the most interesting of the changes of the two, which is called transforming to a new business model is delivering sustained growth. Huh. And 2015, 2016, 2017, trailing 12 months. And they're using that for both revenue, operating income, and adjusted OIBDA. And then they go to the new version. And so in the old version, you have this revenue growth from 659, 729, 784. Now it's 659, 729, 801, which you'll notice that means 2015 and 16 were the same, but 2017 we changed. So in one version, we were double counting a quarter in the old version, and now we're not.
In the old version, they didn't know what Q4 was yet for sure.
Yes, but they used Q4 of 2016 in both the 2016 number and in the 2017 trailing 12 months number.
Okay.
Operating income here was 39, going to 56, going to 63, and the actuals ended up being 39, 56, 76, so they outperformed what they thought they would do. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Or I shouldn't say they outperformed what they thought they would do. They outperformed their trailing 12 months. They had a really good Q4.
Okay.
And then the last one is the unusual one. Adjusted OIBDA, 69 going to 80 going to 98 million. And now it's 86 going to 98 going to 136. And you'll immediately notice the first two examples, 2015 and 2016, stayed the same. In this example, all the numbers changed.
Yeah.
So between version one and version two, they completely redefined what adjusted OIBDA meant. And they even redefined it from what they meant 4 months ago.
Is this reflected in the training schedules? I'm looking right now. Keep talking.
Yeah. So what changed between the two? And I dug into this on Twitter with somebody when they kind of also called this out and said, hey, what the heck happened? And so I did dig in and figure out what they changed in their definition.
Yeah, this is reflected in the trend schedules. So yeah, this, as you're about to explain, I guess they did change the definition of adjusted OIBDA.
Yeah. So I'll pull over the little thing I did here. Hopefully you can see this.
Yep.
So they have this part that says notes, non-GAAP measures. And it on the left side, just to be clear, the left side is the new in this version and the right side is the old. I know we flipped it there. But it says adjusted OIBDA is now operating income excluding depreciation, amortization, stock-based compensation expense. And that's the big one. certain impairment charges and other non-reoccurring material items that would otherwise impact the comparability of results between periods. And it includes amortization expenses directly related to the company's revenue generating activities, the amortization of feature film, TV production, and WWE programming assets. And so when you look at the other one, what's the big difference is that stock-based compensation is not part of the old adjusted OIBDA, and now it is. So
based compensation?
So I think that is when they pay out I could be wrong on this, but I think it's basically when we see that big prospectus document and they talk about how much they're paying out in bonuses to the executives. And a lot of times they don't pay them out in money. They pay them out in stock that they're allowed to acquire at a very low price.
Right.
Immediately sell. Mm-hmm. That's stock-based compensation.
Yeah, board of directors too get stock compensation, I believe.
Exactly. So what they're doing here is they're basically saying instead of including that in OIBDA, we're going to just take that out. We're going to pretend that you don't have, that's not part of our actual OIBDA. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, it makes the numbers look better because you're taking out a big amount of stuff. Mm-hmm. You can see in 2016, it was $18.2 million. In 2017, it was $24.2 million. Mm-hmm. They also have this other subset of what they call other operating income items. A lot of that was, I think, legal fees and other things. Mm-hmm. So again, it's an opportunity to take money out and then suddenly say, oh, it's not part of our OIBDA. That's why we're so profitable. You know, it's nice when you can do that, but I don't know if it's always, I think it just goes to speak to how different it is between a GAAP accounting, generally accepted accounting principles, and actuals. Mm-hmm. And so it's just funny to me where in the old world, they could barely crack 98 million and now they're at 136 million. And in fact, they were at 98 million last year.
Yeah.
And so it just goes to say, when you do adjusted OIBDA, it is a – if you drive your thesis on the value of WWE based on their ability to redefine their profit measure, mm-hmm. you will be shocked because you'll discover that they're hiding things that they're not talking about, mm-hmm. like stock-based compensation, legal fees, failed projects, like when they decided not to do it. They were going to do a building project and they decided to pull the plug on it. And it cost them millions of dollars that they had already invested into it. Mm-hmm. Just things like that. So it's just something interesting to watch is that their OIBDA will always be looking good because of the way they want to define it. Mm-hmm. But operating income at least is something where you can at least hold it steady time over time.
So when it comes to these profit metrics, and this is something that I struggle with, is like, you know, I would have thought before I got into all this stuff that there was just a metric called profit, just like there's a metric called revenue, but it turns out no, there's operating income, there's net income, there used to be something called profit contribution in WWE's reports, there's OIBDA, there's EBITDA, there's adjusted OIBDA. In the case of this business, WWE, which profit metric, is there one profit metric that you think is the most informative to look at?
I mean, I think operating income is going to be standardized. Mm-hmm. I think there's a reason different companies use different numbers and have you focus on different numbers. Mm-hmm. I'm not enough of an accounting wizard to tell you why. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it has to do with, you know, the phase of growth the company is in, mm-hmm. because they're going to experience different costs. And then you also want to compare them to their peers, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes a lot of sense to compare entertainment companies, but it might not make sense to compare Nestle with WWE. Mm-hmm. So it will also, you know, in terms of what are the assets that they have to take. And then you also have different companies that have different types of services. Like, you know, lawyers are going to be providing a very different type of service than a company that makes packaged goods. Mm-hmm. And so when I've read about, you know, accounting measures and things, a lot of it comes down to, yes, generally accepted accounting principles are designed for the purpose of we want to actually be able to compare people using the same metrics, and there is no defined thing as profit. Mm-hmm. And that became a problem. And so they came up with other measures that are more accepted. Even OIBDA is accepted because it's just operating income before depreciation and amortization.
Right. So how about adjusted OIBDA? Is this
taking out extra stuff?
Is this fair? Is this misleading to investors? Is this misleading to just observers who are trying to assess or analyze the direction of this company?
Misleading is a very strong word. I don't think it's misleading. I think it is telling. It is a narrative that they've chosen to use. Mm-hmm. I'll coach my words carefully. But I would just say, you know, what's interesting to see is that operating income only went up $20 million. Adjusted OIBDA went up almost $40 million year over year.
Mm-hmm.
In that same time frame from 2016 to 2017. And so that tells you a lot about their ability to pull certain things out and then call it not part of my OIBDA.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the CAGR is bigger in the older presentation of the numbers, in the older version of just OIBDA, right? Because we start out at a lower point and end up at a higher point by percentage, I would guess.
Probably.
69 to 98 is bigger of a jump than 86 to 163 in percentage, right? Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, absolutely. I think in this case, it's more about the absolute numbers, is that WWE wants to now talk about how they're doing $100 million of OIBDA.
Yeah.
And what is distortive is that what you're not realizing is that they've restated last year. Like for years and years, they've talked about trying to get back to $100 million of OIBDA.
Yeah.
And what you don't realize is, oh, they actually hit that last year under their new definition of OIBDA. Mm-hmm. And so when they come in at 136, if you just remember, hey, a year ago, they were trying to get 100. It sounds like they're killing it. But the reality is they've taken all this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those where you can kind of take your failures out and then leave in your successes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a smart stock analyst is not fooled by this.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think in their PR releases, I think a lot of wrestling media gets confused because they don't realize adjusted OIBDA today isn't even what it was 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So... what a technical and boring thing to talk about, but what an excellent example of just something that is mistaken by so many people.
On the other hand, like if you're talking about like wrestling media getting confused by this, like who in wrestling media is even looking at this besides like you and me and Dave Meltzer?
People try to say, well, we're more, you know, the Roman era is more successful than any other era because we're at $140 million OIBDA.
Roman Stan Twitter, they're going through investor presentation slides.
And then look, I found an investor presentation. I found something from 10 years ago and it shows this number for profitability.
Yeah.
And it's just that they're different numbers. And like you and I have talked about is trying to understand the value of investing. Like the whole question of was the Performance Center a good investment?
Uh-huh.
On the face, it sounds like a great investment. But when you suddenly realize how huge the corporate and other spend exploded over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking because then you're suddenly like, oh my God, NXT does not pay for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's hidden in the numbers. And so I do think it matters because I do think that, you know, your ability to pull out all your stock-based compensation, your ability to pull out your failed projects, the ability for you to pull out your legal fees doesn't present a full picture.
Mm-hmm.
So just, it's interesting here. The financial strategy targets long-term growth. It's interesting, this four piece they have here, solid base of predictable reoccurring events. They're talking about live events and CPG, consumer packaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
Then high growth revenue streams, including WWE Media, aka TV rights. Number three, high margins, 70 to 80%. That's interesting. And there's also select investments, which is the Mae Young Classic, India, and then they have this little like wireless symbol, which I assume is like maybe investing in maybe analytics or something is what that's supposed to mean to them.
I don't know. Yeah. Are they investing in helping emerging economies get better broadband so they can all subscribe to the network? I don't know. Probably not. I don't know.
Last part of this India investment priorities is that you can see the content is the same. The emerging markets are the same, including Saudi Arabia there with the sword and the Arabic.
What are these? Is that Turkey in the red there?
Turkey's in the red. Brazil's also on this flag, which is interesting that Chile's not.
Uh-huh.
And then they have technology, and then you can see the icons they mean for technology here. But what was interesting is in the old version, they mentioned the $215 million that they spent on getting, you know, the free money, mm-hmm. not free money, cash money. Mm-hmm. They're taking that out. Mm-hmm. Though I do notice that on the bottom here, they do mention the $200 million of financing. Mm-hmm. They don't actually make a reference to it in explicitly. So I just thought that was intriguing that they're kind of, I wouldn't say hiding, but they're downplaying the fact that they really strengthened their balance sheet by doing $200 million of borrowing. Mm-hmm. And you have your adjusted things here, and this is where we get that adjusted OIBDA information. Mm-hmm. And you can see the old version just had depreciation, amortization, film impairments, asset impairments, and other income, which came from things that they can't, that are inherently unpredictable. And then now they've added stock compensation as one of the biggest things here.
Yeah.
So I just found that intriguing. Very technical. Hopefully people are watching this on YouTube rather than just listening to this, just because it is a little technical and it's a lot of numbers at once. But I thought it was fun. I'm always enjoy, you know, kind of finding comparisons of how the narrative for WWE changes, because it will tell you a lot about what they're doing, which is for them, they want to start bragging about these super high OIBDA numbers. And so they're taking as much out of it as they can. Mm-hmm. Speaking of bragging, you know, I think it's time for us to thank one of our sponsors on the show.
Yeah. Who would that be?
Well, that'd be Dollar Shave Club. If you ever shower, brush your teeth, or just try to make your hair look presentable, I've got great news for you, because the Dollar Shave Club has a ton of stuff to help you out. The Dollar Shave Club will deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your very best. Brandon, tell me more.
Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready in the bathroom. Any particular product that you have fallen in love with outside of the razor and why? I don't know what that means. Take it
what
away,
what we
Mookie.
Mean is that Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. That's shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, even a wipe that will have your behind feeling tingly clean. Mm-hmm. And I used some Dollar Shave Club products this morning when I took a shower. Mm. And I like their amber and lavender calming body cleanser. It's something that you will never smell in a store. You'll never find this in a store. It's completely unique.
Yeah.
All the Dollar Shave Club's products made with top shelf ingredients. They won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference, and shipping is included with the membership. What can people do if they want to find out more?
And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essentials Starter Kit. It comes with body cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, the amazing butt wipes, the world famous shave butter, their best razor, the Six Blade Executive for WrestleNomics executives out there. And you can keep the blades coming for just a few bucks more a month and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need for the bathroom. You can check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/WE. I did use the razor and the invisible shave butter recently, although I do not shave the entire thing. I do shave some other parts of my body, which I will not disclose, especially the cheeks.
dollarshaveclub.com/WE. Think mm-hmm. WrestleNomic executive. You get WE. We. What's great about it is Dollar Shave Club, not just razors, everything else you need for your bathroom, save you a trip to the pharmacy. It's nice in that way. And Dollar Shave Club has been a proud sponsor of WrestleNomics Radio for many months here, and we're very excited to have them on board. So thank you very much, Dollar Shave Club. Mm-hmm. Let's talk some other topics that we haven't really hit yet that aren't all numbers, but rather some other things like the Young Bucks, you know, the Young Bucks killing the business. Mm-hmm. Did you know that that's the name of their business, Killing the Business, Inc.?
Yeah, we brought this up when we were talking on the premium show about All In and whether All In was – there was some mistaken information about whether All In was really being funded by Ring of Honor or whether it was being funded by Cody and the Young Bucks or what the deal was.
And on the Voices of Wrestling Overrun – they very much went to the source and they said, no, it's not being funded by Sinclair. The article was adjusted to basically make it clear that it was not funded by Sinclair. And so as far as we know, and as far as what people are saying, Sinclair was not behind All In directly. Of course they supported it, but they were not directly behind it.
Mm-hmm. But we found out, I think it was the knowledge was out there before we
registered
discovered
the All In trademarks.
What's that?
So the All-In trademarks were actually registered by the Young Bucks business, Killing the Business, Inc. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the people involved, I think it's one of the Young Bucks' wives is like in charge of the of this company. It's
Dana Massey, who's the wife of Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks.
Yep. And makes sense that, and it's interesting. I guess somebody was saying that that even Cody and people didn't set up their own business. They just used the Young Bucks business line, which is mainly for Young Bucks merch, mm-hmm. but other things. So I thought that was intriguing. Just, you know, finding that registration in California. Mm-hmm. This Deadspin article, if you're on the premium show, there's a long piece that we did with the author, David Bixenspan. Mm-hmm. Articles, you know, look at that, 500,000 views already. Yeah. I think it's some pretty intriguing and damning information about, you know, Chris Amon. And it really raises the question of why he was willing to go so far, knowing that this was out there.
Yeah.
I guess because it sounds like they must have stopped this before it went to trial in terms of being evidence that could be introduced. Yeah, maybe, so perhaps he thought it wouldn't be introduced and therefore it still made sense to go all the way through.
Yeah, maybe his lawyers assured him that this wouldn't come out.
Yeah, and of course, what is the case? It says WWE doctor who sued CM Punk had sexual relationship with wrestler patient. And basically the story that Jillian Hall was a active wrestler in WWE. She was on the same brand as Christopher Amon. They were involved in a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. And according to people like medical ethicists, NYU's own Arthur Kaplan will say, it's a huge ethics no-no. You cannot have a romantic relationship with your patients. It distorts your objectivity in treating them. They can bamboozle you. You can want to please them. And so you can give them things like pain meds. And you already have enough problems working with wrestlers because we have dual loyalties, because you already have the issue between, are you working for the company? Are you working for the betterment of the wrestler? Because the company's paying you, but the wrestlers are your actual patients. Mm-hmm. So it is. And then, of course, you know, basically it says all the code of ethics say don't do it. And if you do have that relationship, you should discontinue being the person who treats that wrestler. And so you could have gone to the other brand. You could have, you know, clearly disclosed this. And in fact, WWE actually said, we were not aware of this. We are investigating the matter. We'll determine if action is warranted. And Dave Meltzer had kind of a throwaway line in the latest Observer where he mentioned Amon's contract was, quote, up in October.
Yeah. And we talked to Bix about this for, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes on the premium show, which is out there at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. We talked about that and we talked about what else. Harold Mage, all the background research you've been doing on him. The Ring of Honor coming to the Madison Square Garden 2019 Triple H's conference call before NXT TakeOver. Chris Jericho's business model with him playing with his hair and discussing, you know, how he has to wrestle a few spots and he's making big money and what's going on in the business. And we talk about star ratings too. Big topic this week. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We went deep into star ratings. We went through my list of all the Dave Meltzer data after Dominion. Mm-hmm. And I will have to probably update this now with both Money in the Bank and with the NXT show, because I think it will help some people out a lot. Especially, you know, I have here on the screen, I don't know if you're looking or not, but I have the star ratings up for.
Yep.
This is if I cap everything at 5 stars. If I leave it uncapped, it looks a little different. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is if I let it go all the way up to 7 stars, then you can see Kenny Omega averages well over 5. But what's intriguing is you will see some WWE guys here, especially in the top 3 and top 5 category that could be moving up. Ricochet, Johnny Gargano. I think Velveteen Dream shows up very high in some of these lists. So I could certainly see a situation where it's a little skewed now because it has lots of New Japan data and WWE data is a little bit more segmented. And especially NXT data is very segmented. Mm-hmm. So I think it will add a little bit more vision when we start to see, you know, people like Ricochet and Velveteen Dream and some of the other people, Gargano and Ciampa and whatnot, who are getting a little bit more exposure.
Yeah.
And Seth Rollins, too. He's one of the biggest, you know, he's the top WWE guy, arguably. Same with Roman Reigns down at 29. But, you know, Seth Rollins, how he performs will definitely impact him. And based on my definition of a singles match, a multi-man Money in the Bank match does count as a singles match. Mm-hmm. So, yep. But we had a really good debate on that and discussion about influencing people and just, you know,
the challenges you have when it comes to what are you saying and doing, and how does that influence the way that people cover what they think you're saying and doing?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. WrestleNomics Free Show. Some of the other subjects I want to talk about is Jeff Hardy pleading guilty to his DWI. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing that, you know, you have a guy like that who was suspended 30 days in July of 2007. He was suspended 60 days in March 2008. He no-showed TNA. He had that debacle in 2011 where he showed up in no condition to perform against Sting.
Yeah.
And he's back with the company, and again, he's getting a DWI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talked about, you know, what would you do if you came back to the company? Same thing with Rey Mysterio. What happens when you have, quote, two strikes against you?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen them, people like Randy Orton, redefine the scale in a way.
The strikes are not wellness policy. The wellness policy says nothing about DUIs, DWIs.
Yes. And of course, one of the Usos just got a DWI recently, yeah, or a driving while impaired or ability impaired or whatever the definition was.
Yeah.
And though I don't remember if that one went through or not, but it's one of those where it does raise that big question about, does the company have the right? Does the company have the desire to punish people when these things happen?
From the outside? No, I don't know. The Usos, do you think the Usos, it doesn't appear on screen that they were punished or had opportunities taken away from them, right?
One of them got jobbed out that week, but no, for the most part, no.
Well, wins and losses, do they really matter in WWE in modern times?
That's true.
Jeff Hardy, U.S. champion. So I don't know.
Yeah. And again, I would just argue these are warning signs, right? So you have guys whose job is to travel town to town, and they're meant to be ambassadors for the company. And we've seen it blow up before, you know, like it did with Jack Swagger and RVD and people, mm-hmm, and Sabu and others in the past. So it is a problem when it goes really bad.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's very much a red flag to me is when you have a guy like that and he has a long history of issues, and then you can almost argue, okay, you're relapsing here.
Yeah.
And we as a company, if we really care about our performers, should be taking a more aggressive viewpoint of trying to say, hey, what can we do to intervene and stop this, rather than what can we do to make this go away as quickly as it can?
What should they do? Maybe say, hey, take off house shows for now, and I don't know, what?
Yeah, I mean, put it in as put more restrictions into their actual performance there to say, hey, we're not interested in doing business with you if you're going to act like this. You're a liability to our company.
Maybe they should suspend him.
It could be a suspension. It could be a remediation. You know, take him up to headquarters and scream at him. And I don't know. I'm not in charge of talent relations,
yeah,
so it's hard for me to say. But I always feel like it sends quite a message to the NXT crowd that, you know, it's kind of going back to the days of FCW where lots of guys were getting DWIs and it didn't matter. Hmm. So I just worry that, yeah, I think for a company that's pushing itself as family friendly as it is, they should be more concerned about the fact that they have wrestlers out there that are getting arrested for DWI.
Yeah. Do you think wrestling media makes less of a big deal about it because Jeff Hardy is a big star, and there's no, like, I don't know if this was like Enzo Amore, if Enzo Amore was, you know,
I think sexual assault considered a much worse.
I'm not talking about sexual assault though. So
no, but I'm saying I think there's things like sexual assault that is the Twitter fans are will not forgive.
Yeah.
And DWI doesn't seem to be that unforgivable sin.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, if this was somebody who people wanted to pile on, this would be a bigger deal. Jeff Hardy's, yep, not somebody that people want to pile on at the moment because he's in favor, or at least not in unfavor among, I don't know, wrestling fandom.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. The people that are unpopular, like people that are unpopular with a large group, get, mm-hmm, treated differently than people that are popular with a large group, for sure.
If Roman Reigns got a DWI, what would happen?
We would not hear the end of it, yeah. I mean, people still bring up his drug suspension.
He's under a microscope, although you could say, I don't know. That's almost been forgotten, I feel like.
I think it's been diminished, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would argue that a drug suspension is in some ways less serious than a DWI because, you know, what you're doing to yourself impairs you and presents you poorly to the company and violates policy, but does not necessarily harm others.
Yeah, I think there's a libertarian philosophy of like what you do with your body is your own business. But when you're getting in a car under the influence of drugs or alcohol and you're putting other people on the road in danger.
Yes.
Whereas when you take drugs, you're not really, unless you're wrestling under the influence of drugs, but that's not apparently.
Which is something also Jeff Hardy has done. So
But I'm talking about in the case of like a Roman Reigns.
I know, we don't know
what substance he. I don't know if we don't even know if he failed drug test. He just violated the wellness policy, whatever that
is. We don't
know
whether it was a steroid violation or whether it was an Adderall violation, whether it was some other violation.
Yeah.
Painkillers could have been many different things.
Yeah.
The only thing I think we can be sure is that it wasn't a mono vaccine?
Where they all get sick with? The mumps?
Mumps, yeah. It wasn't a mumps vaccine.
Yeah.
WWE did an interesting – they're doing this SummerSlam contest with Nestle Water where, you know, you talk about why you're choosing water and you can go to WWE.com/choosewater and you can win a trip to SummerSlam and get tickets and a round trip airfare and hotel accommodations. And they're going to do custom co-branded digital videos with Flair, Natalya, The New Day, Sin Cara, and Titus O'Neil. And what's in, of course, notable is that Tara Carraro is now the chief corporate affairs officer at Nestle Waters. Previously an SVP of global communications at WWE. I've communicated with Tara when she worked for WWE. So that name really jumped out at me.
She used to be a media relations.
Yeah, exactly. Global communications was, I think, her formal title. But when you used to email WWE for comment, she was one of the people that would reply.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole separate piece on DigiDay where it just talked about why did Nestle Waters choose WWE, which is one of the weirder articles because it's one of those that very much feels like this is a planted story of like Nestle and WWE like calling up someone and being like, wouldn't it be great to write an article about why it's important that Nestle chose WWE to do a program?
Yeah. Did they provide quotes for this? No.
WWE. Not exactly, but it's one of these weird ones where, well, Carraro, but this is a quote from the press release.
Mm.
But what was really funny here is WWE has tried to restyle itself as family friendly for the past decade. In the past, WWE, formerly called WWF, was known for its brash character, abrasive language, when blood, scantily clad women and profanity were common in the ring and in its marketing. It has since covered up the women more and invited kids in the ring to meet star wrestlers. They've also sponsored do-good organizations like Make-A-Wish and Susan B. Komen to burnish its image.
Mm-hmm.
Burnish. I'm just amused by the it's covered women up more.
Yeah.
That's a interesting way to put it.
Maybe they've been consuming some that Dubai match with Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks and just thinking that that's the norm or something. I don't know.
And then also the idea that they just started working with Make-A-Wish. You know, which they have arguably a 40-year history with, probably.
Yeah.
Going back to the days of Hogan.
Mm-hmm. They make a bigger deal of it now than they used to, though, don't they?
They certainly do.
Like, I don't remember growing up watching WF Superstars and seeing, like, Hogan doing a Make-A-Wish all the time. Like, I guess I feel like we see segments about Make-A-Wish. I don't know. There's probably segments of, like about Make-A-Wish or about whatever charitable endeavors they're doing almost every week on WTV.
It's and also the last thing I'd say is it's always interesting to see who is the face of a campaign. It will tell you a lot about who's in the good favor for WWE right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Titus, Charlotte, New Day, Natalya, Sin Cara.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear, you know, some of the different demographics that they might be going for here.
Mm-hmm.
By choosing these people, but also speaks to something like Titus O'Neil. If Titus O'Neil was going to be in a lot of trouble for that Swerve lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd see him as the spokesman for a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that's almost his greater value to WWE. Not as a performer, but as being a guy who goes and visits places and does speeches and things like that.
Yeah, and same thing, you know, Charlotte, we're seeing more and more of her trying to be this front of the brand.
Yeah, she's asking Natalya Wilson, how can she improve her brand?
Yeah. And then New Day, you know, speaks a lot to, you know, why did Xavier Woods kind of not dodge the bullet when a lot of that stuff came out with Paige. And I think a lot of it was that New Day is a marketing force for WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they are very happy to both market themselves and market WWE. And did you watch any of the Street Fighter thing with Being Elite?
No, but I heard about it in a car ride this weekend.
Yeah, I had a friend actually text me being like, I watched the whole thing. It was great. And, you know, they cut promos on each other. They did lots of fun stuff.
Oh, really? It was on Twitch, I heard.
Yeah, so it was a good it sounded like it was very spirited, and it's kind of intriguing because it really does speak to kind of the growth of New Japan as a social media brand on the backs of people like the Elite, you know, really pushing it up and making it more accessible, because I think people knew what they were doing and what they're talking about in a way that you just can't imagine 5 years ago people would know, you know, a guy who's pretty much been a mostly Japanese wrestling star. Mm-hmm.
I heard that, was it Big E and Kofi and the Bucks? They didn't know how to play the game very well, Street Fighter. But when Xavier and Kenny got going, they knew what they were doing. The others were just smashing buttons.
Yeah, I think Xavier is a huge video game guy. Oh, yeah. And I will say, you know, video game up, up, down, down stuff where they have guys, you know, playing against each other backstage sometimes is like the best personality profiles of them you will see. Like the Luke Harper that you see on the behind the scenes, formerly known as video, comes out as well when it's the video of him trying to beat Connor of the Ascension and Tozawa and Xavier and other people on different games on that channel. It's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Other things to talk about. The stop, drop, and roll inside India's pro wrestling academies. Did you read this article at all?
No, did you just add this?
This morning it came out. This is a very interesting piece. Anisha George of the Hindustan Times wrote it, and she did a very good job. I would say compared to a lot of articles about wrestling, this one actually has a lot of information about what is happening in India right now with pro wrestling. And it doesn't pretend it's real in the sense of it mentions determination, practice, choreography. It compares them over and over and over to two people. You know who they are?
No.
Vita Devi and Great Khali.
Mm-hmm.
You know who's never mentioned once in this whole article?
Jinder Mahal.
Mahal is never mentioned once in the whole article.
Nice Canadian.
Which I thought was really interesting. They talk about how something like 10 out of the 35 people that went to Dubai in 2017 for the tryouts were Indian.
Oh.
And then they kind of go through all the different companies that are running like training things right now, including Kali CWE,
mm-hmm.
but other feds. And some of them are – you do wonder with some of them whether or not they're like almost backyard feds with Facebook and, you know, they're just trying to like be a fed.
You could say that about so many US indies though. And
no, it's very funny. So it's very similar in a sense, is that you're seeing the same things.
Yeah.
Where it's very much like the US 20 years ago.
Yeah. Or the US now in many parts now, of the country.
And then, you know, it's good photographs. They talk about, you know, groups that drew 800 people. Training is free as long as you agree to perform your fights.
What?
I know. They talk about one point, these twins that are coming to the Pumping Brothers, these two big guys that are coming in. But the problem is they only have 15% vision.
What?
And how their father drives them 4 hours each way to do training.
Wow.
It's an interesting video, interesting article. You know, even it's vital to stay in character, explains Prince. WWE star Bill Goldberg barely smiled during public events.
Did he?
Says he starts building aggression over the 24 hours before each event. I start snapping. I become irritable. My family hates it. Is this something that you do, Brandon? Is that you make sure that you become irritable and difficult?
I didn't think so, that would explain a lot about why I am so irritable and difficult. Maybe I'm unconsciously getting in character, and I do snap into promo mode every now and then. Yeah.
So it's a good article. I really appreciated the fact that it's not, you know, it's not pretending that everything that is happening here is really necessarily that the WWE is playing a large impact on the boom. And I actually found this article because they mentioned Berrios at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Is the quote here about India is a crown jewel for us.
Mm-hmm.
That he talks about things. And just the fact that it just, like you've said before, it underscores the idea that Kali is the guy. He means a lot to the Indian marketplace.
Yeah, I guess I said that.
They didn't mention Dara Singh or anything else, you know, the old generation too.
Are you talking about like Google trends we looked at? Like the Google searches in India for Kali are big, bigger than Jinder Mahal last I checked. And yeah, he's a big deal in India.
And also that TNA doesn't get any recognition whatsoever.
In that article.
Even though they've spent so much time, you know, trying to develop the marketplace there.
Yeah.
So I found it a really interesting, balanced piece, intriguing for sure, and informative. So it's worth reading. And if you go to my account at Mukigana, you can read it. WWE did finally announce their giant stadium show in Australia.
Yeah,
which it's exciting. October 6th will be happening the WWE Super Showdown. It's been mentioned that Brock Lesnar has not, in fact, been announced for the show, leading some people to wonder whether or not his contract is going to be up or not. On the flip side, they have mentioned Daniel Bryan for the show, and he is someone who supposedly his contract is up September 1st, he said.
Yeah.
And the show would be in October. So this would suggest that they think, at least, that they can advertise him.
He's in here? Where is he in here?
He's right there in the middle of the photo.
His face is on there. Okay.
Yes. Happy Bryan, Daniel.
Yeah. It,
Joe, Xavier. You got the whole New Day, Bray. Carmella, Nakamura, Bliss, Orton, Finn, Sasha, Rude, Lashley, AJ, Tamina, Strowman, Miz, Asuka, Rollins, Rousey, Triple H, Undertaker, in which I believe they advertised their final match ever.
Mm-hmm.
Cena.
For both of them? Neither of them are ever going to wrestle again.
Their final match against each other.
Okay.
It's each other.
This isn't
the final time they'll wrestle one another.
This isn't completely new news about this Australian pay-per-view, right? We kind of knew about it, but this is being fleshed out. It has a name now. It has wrestlers who are advertised. It has a main event.
It's at the Melbourne Cricket Ground in Melbourne. So it's a big stadium. I mean, like they're saying, a stadium show that could seat 80, 90 plus thousand.
It's going to air live on the W Network. Yes, it is. It says at the bottom of the poster.
It mentions live on the WWE Network. You're right, which is different than what they're doing with the Mae Young Classic, which is different what they're doing with some of the other shows. But it also speaks to the fact that, you know, Beast in the East was a huge success, even with the time change. And I'm guessing this would be a similar time change.
Yeah. Close? I'm about to look. How close is this to the pay-per-view in October that's already scheduled or the surrounding pay-per-views? This is October the 6th, correct? Oh. It's Australian pay-per-view. And in 2018,
you'll notice it's a multi-brand pay-per-view too. That the talent I was mentioning there is both Raw and SmackDown.
It's as in between.
October 21st is Boston. Yeah.
Yeah, it's as in between as it's going to get. September 16th is Hell in a Cell in Nashville. October 6th in Australia. October 21st in Boston for TLC. So
I have Hell in a Cell being as in San Antonio, not Nashville.
I'm looking at Wikipedia, so who knows.
It's a good question. Which one is it? Which one is it?
Retrieved on June 5. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking somewhere else. But I you know, big stadium show. It's amazing. WrestleMania, big Superdome show. Saudi Arabia, big stadium show. Australia, big stadium show. You know, to do three stadium shows on three continents in the same year is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be an enormous year for growth, and it'll be interesting to see how it impacts the live event numbers that we see coming forward here, especially knowing how cheap the Saudi Arabia show was, how expensive WrestleMania was, and how expensive the Australian show should be with the, you know, even with the subsidies they're getting. I think it's gonna be much more like a WrestleMania.
Good. This is probably not a bot show like the Saudi Arabia show is a bot show, right? So I wonder, like, you know, they did Royal Rumble in 2017 in a stadium in San Antonio. They Alamo Dome, right? I wonder if they're going to do, like, maybe that's that, you know, the Royal Rumble was not at a stadium this year. So I wonder if they're kind of going to, you know, do this one-off stadium show that's run, you know, bought by themselves, not by somebody else, like once a year, or I don't know. I guess they could do more if they just do really good business. But yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, so then there's also the question of, will Rousey be a draw? You know, I think some of this too was the idea that
is she on that poster?
She's on that poster, yes.
Okay.
But just that Rousey was a big deal for some of her fights in Australia, her big fight in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I believe the home fight.
Yeah. So bringing that back, that will be part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the last thing I had for topics for the show today was just about this Oliver Luck story, basically saying that he is going to reportedly receive a $20 million guarantee to serve as the commissioner of Vince McMahon's revived XFL.
This is the father of Andrew Luck, quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts, right?
And I just think that's absurd. Like, you know, if Vince McMahon had to take $100 million out of Alpha Entertainment so that he could for his thing, he's taking a fifth of it to get one guy. A guy, you know, this is Brock Lesnar plus John Cena money.
Yeah.
You really think about it.
Yeah.
And that's like, hey, you know what? If I was WWE, I also would not want to invest in that league.
Yeah, he's not working on shows either.
I'd be happy to share with you, but I would not be happy to invest in that.
Yeah.
So it also mentions this K&L Gates took the lead on the matter for the wrestling industry titan. You know, no surprise there that Vince is using K&L Gates for a lot of stuff.
K&L Gates. Let me see if I know this. K&L Gates is Jerry McDivitt.
It is. And the same, and Christopher Verdindi or whatever, which is the guy who did all the trademarks for, you know, for the love of football and UFL and what eventually became XFL stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For Alpha Entertainment. So many people at K&L Gates have been involved. And in fact, the WWE's XFL trademarks have been kind of signed over to the K&L Gates lawyer for Alpha Entertainment.
Hmm.
So I just thought that was really interesting that, you know, $20 million, that's where $20 million already went to one guy, supposedly. Seems like he's got a lot to deliver on for $20 million.
Well, oh yeah, I guess that does make sense. I was going to say, well, it's not $20 million per year, but it's not as if
$1 million guarantee.
Yeah, but it's not as if like that $100 million was a per year thing. He's not going to draw another $100 million, or at least he's not. We don't know that he is.
You know, now, hell, it'd be cheaper than ever for him to get another $100 million out of the company.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's probably in. I mean, honestly, I think they're in what they might consider a stock freeze right now. With all this hype going on about their stock, about their TV deals without a formal announcement,
mm-hmm.
You know how shady it would look if Vince McMahon started to sell when he knows the number that they got, but nobody else does?
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm guessing they're probably in somewhat of a freeze period now where they're not allowed to, where basically no one's allowed to go sell their stock until they make a formal announcement. Yeah.
Just to do some quick math, so let's say the stock price is about $60. I think it's a couple of dollars above that. But say he sells stock at $60 per share. How many shares would he have to sell to make to get $100 million? And the answer
is 62.67. Now let's assume that he only is going to get maybe $58 a share because he usually has to sell a little bit below.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying he's going to. That's why I'm saying 60. Yeah, that's why I'm saying 60. So he would have to sell 1.67 million shares to get $100 million again. But he's got like something like 35 or 32 million shares left.
So if he wants another 100 million, he can pull it out. He can certainly pay this guy's salary.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that he has that much faith in this one guy
mm-hmm.
to put $20 million behind him. I mean, if you're getting like Roger Goodell or something where, yeah, it's a brand that may or may not be positive.
Yeah. I think he's really
buying something where I'd be like, this is a big deal. This guy, half of his claim is that he's a lawyer and that his son is a successful NFL player.
Yeah. I think Vince McMahon should take more of the responsibility onto himself and should spend less time on WWE creative and things
Your
like that.
Your own selfish desire to see less Vince in WWE?
It's not only selfish. It would also be good for the company because they leave money on the table because they create such a bad TV product.
And that is that, folks. We're getting to the end of our show here.
Mookie pauses as if that's a controversial opinion. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. You can subscribe to us on patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And that's it.
I'm at Mookie Ghana, and be sure to find us on Twitter at WrestleNomics.
You're making sure that everybody... There we go. Now I'm not in mirror vision. Hi.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, for checking out this unusual broadcast. We're still working out our kinks, as you can obviously see, but we're having fun kind of showing you different information and giving you a reality of what it is like to simulcast with Brandon and I. Yeah. Happy Father's Day to the fathers out there. Mm-hmm. I hope you are serenaded with epic poetry of your greatness and delivered trays of candied fruits and meats for your finding.
You can, here's a plug. You can get a Super Beast merchandise at, I think it's paypal.me/beastbuy. You can get all the Super Beast merchandise that you know you want.
So you know you want it.
Yeah, you can get this waffle t-shirt like I'm wearing.
And I will give a review of the sushi place next week on free or the premium show.
Are you going to use a star rating system for that?
Hopefully. I'll use a Meltzer star rating system so I can.
So, how many stars? 4 stars? 5 stars? Are you going to break the system?
Mine is going to be on a 3-dimensional axis, so it'll involve imaginary numbers.
Are you going to go back and say that even though you broke it, that it was always really broken, and that maybe you know the restaurant owners personally, so that just forget about it.
I think I agree with Dave's thing. 5 stars is match of the year. 6 stars is match of the decade. 7 stars is the best match you've ever seen in your life. If that's your scale, it makes sense to break it. Talk to you later, everybody. WrestleNomics.com. Bye-bye.
Bye.